chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, and no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are rest make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. We've got this, we're going to cover the BuzzFeed scandal, and then also we're going to feature at the very end the president's speech this afternoon from the White House. It's an offer to try to settle this this impasse that he has with the Democrats, this closed down, this government closed down. But we're going to be playing that at the end and making comments at the end. Otherwise, our second news item will be the World Economic Forum. And this year, there's going to be a focus on globalization and globalism, and they're going to try to set those out, and then they're going to talk about the fourth industrial revolution. We have a clip that we're going to play also to start this thing off, and then we're going to get into the different explanations that they're trying to push over there. But anyway, what's coming up next, first here is Don Lemon was reporting for CNN earlier the week about this scandal that the president supposedly was caught up with Cohen about he did this and did that and was given instructions about a Trump Tower in Moscow, and he was told not to lie to Congress about it and to not to divulge it and so forth. But Mueller just recently, yesterday, released a statement that there was no truth to this whatsoever. And so, you know, this left BuzzFeed out on the limb. Of course, they're saying that they're sticking by the story. But anyway, I'm going to present first what Don Lemon, how he reported. And not only MSNBC, but CNN hundreds of times have dwelled on this impeachment. This is the smoking gun that they needed to get rid of Trump. But here we go with what Don Lemon said.
This is CNN Tonight. I'm Don Lemon, and we have breaking news tonight on the Russia investigation. Here's what BuzzFeed News is reporting, that President Trump directed Michael Cohen to lie in his testimony to Congress about negotiations to build a Trump Tower in Moscow. And this is stunning. They're also reporting that Trump supported a plan, listen to this, set up by Michael Cohen to visit Russia during the campaign to meet Vladimir Putin in person. BuzzFeed also says that special counsel Robert Mueller's team learned about Trump's directive for Cohen to lie to Congress through interviews with multiple witnesses from the Trump org, as well as emails, texts, and other documents. CNN has not yet confirmed the report. We have a lot to get to this hour. Let's begin with CNN's Sarah Murray. Sarah, this is stunning, this BuzzFeed report that President Trump directed his attorney to lie to Congress about the Moscow Tower project. Tell us about the reporting. What are you hearing?
I mean, it is a wild story because, you know, if this is accurate, and as you pointed out, CNN has not independently confirmed it, it's an indication that the president was, in fact, trying to obstruct justice. Now, the way that BuzzFeed has put it, they cited two federal law enforcement officials to say that President Trump directed Michael Cohen to basically say the discussions about the Trump Tower Moscow project ended earlier than they did. So it wouldn't look like Donald Trump was trying to negotiate this project while he was the GOP nominee in 2016. Now, the story also cites this line. It says, the special counsel's office learned about Trump's directive for Cohen to lie to Congress through interviews with multiple witnesses from the Trump organization and internal company emails, text messages, and a cache of other documents. And, Don, you can bet if the special counsel is planning on relying on this, if this is true, they would have to have documents to back it up, because everyone knows at this point that Michael Cohen is a witness with a lot of problems. He's a guy who's already pled guilty to lying before Congress, who's shown he's been willing to make things up to protect protect the president. And so in this case, you know, could certainly be making things up to protect himself if, in fact, this is somehow traced back to him. We don't have these documents that can corroborate these conversations at this point. What we do, though, have tonight is a comment from Rudy Giuliani to CNN and other outlets that says, if you believe Cohen, I can get you a good deal on the Brooklyn Bridge. And I think this is what we're going to see from the president's legal team, essentially saying that Cohen is a liar and you can't believe anything.
Interesting. So what has the position been about the Trump Tower Moscow project from President Trump?
Well, if you want to talk about credibility problems that Michael Cohen has, obviously, Don, President Trump has the same kind of credibility problems. He was the person who was out there throughout the entire campaign saying, I have no relationship with Russia, I have no business deals with Russia, I have no potential business deals with Russia. And then when it came out that, in fact, they were talking about a Trump Tower Moscow project much longer than President Trump and then candidate Trump were originally forthcoming about, he said, you know, essentially this was no big deal. Everyone knew about it at the time. It didn't go anywhere and really tried to downplay it, although obviously the fact that the special counsel is looking into it is an indication that Robert Mueller is interested, Don.
No collusion, no collusion, no collusion, right? That is what we have been hearing all along from the president, from his team. But that message seems to have been intentionally muddied last night by Rudy Giuliani. Is Rudy Giuliani trying to walk that back or just add to all of this confusion, Sarah?
You know, he's insisting that he really didn't mean anything by it. It's being misinterpreted, this idea that he said, you know, no collusion by Donald Trump. I don't really know what everyone else was up to. He tried to clarify this comment a number of different times today and essentially say, look, I have no evidence that anyone else in the campaign colluded about anything, but my client is Donald Trump. I'm trying to protect my client, the president of the United States, and that's who I was speaking for, and that's what I was trying to make clear. But I think the reality, Don, is that they've been surprised by a lot of the developments in this case. I mean, Paul Manafort sharing polling data, I think, is a good example of something no one really expected to see coming in this. And so, you know, he could say that this was just sort of an innocent misspeak, but maybe it's an indication that they're trying to brace themselves for other bombshells that they didn't necessarily know were coming.
All right, Sarah, thank you. I appreciate your reporting on this. I'm going to bring in now Ryan Lizza. April Ryan, who is the author of Under Fire, reporting from the front lines of the Trump White House, and Garrett Graff, the author of The Threat Matrix Inside Robert Mueller's FBI and the War on Global Terror. Good evening to all of you. So, Ryan, let me start with you. Give me your reaction to this BuzzFeed report.
I mean, my first reaction is that the two 20th century impeachments, Nixon and Clinton, the articles of impeachment drawn up by the Judiciary Committee in both of those cases, subornation of perjury, encouraging someone to perjure themselves, that was a part of Article 1 in the Nixon impeachment. Of course, he resigned before that got anywhere. And that was a part of the Clinton impeachment as well. It was one of the shakier parts, frankly, I think, of the Clinton impeachment. But encouraging someone to lie to Congress, to the FBI, to any duly situated federal official or investigative body is a federal crime.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is probably one of the most serious pieces of reporting in the, you know, 2+ years of this Russia investigation.
All right, let me go through some of this, and I want you guys to respond if you can to brief answers, because I got to get a bunch of stuff in. Trump received 10 personal updates from Michael Cohen and encouraged a planned meeting with Vladimir Putin. Okay, President Donald Trump directed his longtime attorney Michael Cohen to lie to Congress about negotiations to build a Trump Tower in Moscow, according to two federal law enforcement officials involved in an investigation of that matter. April, what do you think about this reporting? I mean, if this proves to be true, again, we haven't independently confirmed it here at CNN. As Ryan says, this is huge.
Yeah, it's big. Ryan is absolutely right. But I'm going to say this. If Michael Cohen has done what he's done in the past, what's alleged and he's acknowledged, why is this any different, really? You know, he was his fixer and his cleanup guy, the guy who would get his hands dirty And this just really puts, if this report is accurate, it just puts into, once again, the box that we already have about what Michael Cohen was for the president, what he had done, well, for civilian or nominee Trump at the time.
But April, this is not about Michael Cohen. This is about the action of the person who is president. This is about his actions at the time.
It is.
And it's according to multiple sources from the very organization of the president and of Michael Cohen.
I understand. But what it does, Michael Cohen, once again, puts another nail in that coffin for this president because he had been doing things for the president. This is big. This is yet again another thing. We've heard so much. We've heard about payments. We've heard about this. We've heard about that. And now this is just another thing to tell, for the president to tell him to move the time in 2016 when he was knowingly a candidate. And he knew, and this also shows that there wasn't a learning curve. He knew what he was doing. Yeah. But this, you know, it's, yeah, it's just yet again another thing.
But Garrett, here's the thing. He is telling the American public one thing, right, and then doing another thing behind the scenes, trying to get a business deal instead of focusing on the business of the American people. He's trying to get a business deal for a Trump Tower in Moscow and then eventually lying about it.
Absolutely. I think that this is, you know, Ryan and April, I agree completely. This is some of the biggest, most substantial new allegations that we have seen. Three things stand out to me in it really quickly. The first is that this is based on Trump Organization documents and testimony from witnesses inside. I mean, that's a really good way to think about just how much visibility Bob Mueller has into the depths of the Trump Organization's business dealings over the last couple of years. The second is that this focuses on the lies to Congress, which is, I think, going to make it much harder for Congress to ignore this. I mean, this isn't sort of something that they can brush away. This is something that arrives immediately on their doorstep. And the third thing is, again, this shows how much knowledge Bob Mueller has amassed that we don't know, and that this obstruction case, which we sort of think of very simply as, you know, well, did he fire Jim Comey and try to block the Russia investigation in May of 2017? Well, this obstruction case, if and when it comes from Bob Mueller, may actually stretch all the way up until the last couple of weeks. I mean, this is a pattern of activity that is ongoing, and Bob Mueller is interested in all of it.
Yeah. Trump also encouraged, let me find the quote. Trump also encouraged Cohen to plan a trip to Moscow during the campaign where the candidate could meet face to face with Putin. Ryan, President Trump was trying to get a face to face meeting with a foe of the United States, allegedly, according to BuzzFeed, during a presidential election campaign to get something of tremendous value for his personal business. Is that compromise?
You stated it very well. And yeah, this report, the more I sort of process this report, it's just incredible detail about the two biggies of the Russia investigation, right? The collusion aspect, right? This Trump building a relationship and trying to build a relationship, not just with folks in Moscow, but with Putin himself, while pursuing a financial, while pursuing a project there. And then when it sort of unravels and is disclosed, telling his top lawyer to lie about it, allegedly, according to this report. So this goes to the heart of everything we've been talking about for the last couple of years, the collusion and the cover-up.
If you'll notice, that was the report on CNN and Don Lemon. They're taking quotes out of this so-called report that even CNN says it hasn't been verified. And they're just quoting, you know, directly quoting like it's the truth. This is how much fake news we have out here today. And that's what Trump has been saying about this reporting out here. It is terrible. And there's a lot of fake news going on out here. And so we tab time and time again of these people, you know, just saying verbatim that this is true. I mean, you know, this is what happened and so forth, you know, and, you know, they're not even saying that this is not verified yet. They're speaking as if all of this has been verified and is true and is, you know, to what, you know, what they're saying. I mean, this is what's happened to the press, is that you have a tremendous problem out here in the press. Now, let me read for you, Special Prosecutor Mueller's statement that, Peter Carr, announced late yesterday evening. Here's what he says, quotations, BuzzFeed's description of specific statements to the special counselor's office and characterization of documents and testimony obtained by this office regarding Michael Cohen's congressional testimony are not accurate. Quotations closed. That was said by Peter Carr, a spokesman for Mueller's office. So there you go. It totally refutes and rebuts what these reporters for CNN were saying just on this earlier clip on this program. So you're not going to get any truth out of these fake news mainstream media anymore. And this is what we have going on and on and on. They started jumping on this story like it was the truth, and they reported, and then Mueller had to rebuke the story. Now they're saying, or the report is, that BuzzFeed, according to their recent statements, are standing by the story. Now, what does that mean? They've even made, say, statements that they're waiting to see what parts of it that Mueller is disputing and things like this. But they said that they're standing by the story. Now, what is that all about? Everyone is saying this is the first time that Mueller has ever spoken up publicly about his special counselor or special prosecutor investigation on Trump. So when he speaks up like this, that means a lot. And so that's what we have to look at and sort of, you know, home in on. We're going to cover a couple of clips in here. One, that occurred on Tucker Carlson's, and then a little later, an hour later, on Sean Hannity on this BuzzFeed, scandal and controversy. But here we go with what, Tucker Carlson was saying about it last night.
Counsel is denying the substance of that story. Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson tonight. This is moving very fast, a remarkable day. Trace Gallagher has more on what is happening. Trace?
And this really is the bombshell, Tucker, because breaking right now, as you said, Robert Mueller, special counsel, a spokesperson, has knocked down this BuzzFeed report, quoting now BuzzFeed's description of specific statements to the special counsel's office and characterization of documents and testimony obtained by this office regarding Michael Cohen's congressional testimony are not accurate. That is critical because, remember, the BuzzFeed report laid this at the door of the special counsel, saying, quoting again, the special counsel's office learned about Trump's directive for Cohen to lie to Congress through interviews with multiple witnesses from the Trump Organization and internal company emails, text messages, and a cache of other documents. But one of the reporters who wrote the piece admitted he never saw the alleged damning documents, but he still maintained that his reporting was rock solid. Listen to him.
I am rock solid. My sourcing on this goes beyond the two that are on the record. This 100% happened.
Yeah, 100%, except President Trump says it 100% didn't happen, tweeting, quote, lying to reduce jail time, clearly referencing Michael Cohen's 3-year prison sentence. White House Deputy Press Secretary Hogan Gidley added this comment. Watch.
This is absolutely ludicrous that we are giving any type of credence or credibility to a news outlet like BuzzFeed.
And he's right. BuzzFeed does have credibility issues, including multiple accusations of plagiarizing and stealing original content. A Pew Research survey also found the publication to be unreliable. And, of course, BuzzFeed published the uncorroborated and salacious Steele dossier, which was labeled an unverified smear of President Trump. Even Democrats eager to impeach the president had to qualify their comments today, saying if the information is true. Watch.
We don't know whether the new report about Cohen being told to lie by the president is true or not. We'll have to ask Mr. Cohen that.
Yeah, Cohen is supposed to go back before Congress next month, but his legal advisor, Lanny Davis, says he might be having second thoughts about that. Remember, 24 hours after BuzzFeed broke this story, nobody matched the reporting, and now we know it's because it wasn't true. Tucker.
Just unbelievable. Just unbelievable. If you've been by a television today, you have seen a level of frothy hysteria that really I've never seen in 25 years of watching. Trace Gallagher, thank you very much. Andy McCarthy is a contributing editor at National Review. He's the former chief assistant U.S. attorney in New York, and he joins us tonight. Andy McCarthy, this is not, I mean, I think most of us were at least taking seriously the possibility that this story was rooted in fact. Now the special counsel's office, which has commented on virtually nothing for the past 2 years, is knocking it down. What is your reaction to this?
Well, I think the most important thing, Tucker, is the money paragraph of the BuzzFeed story is the one that Trace Gallagher homed in on. And the reason that's important is because what the Trump response to this, if there were any credibility to it, would want to be is that you can't believe anything that Cohen says because he's a pervasive serial liar. But the way this story was teed up, it was that Mueller had developed independent information,
right,
and corroborated it, pieced it together himself, and then he confronted Cohen on it. It's not a thing where, you know, Cohen is peddling this information. So that, if I were the White House, that would have been the part that would have alarmed me the most. And that's the part that it appears that Mueller has blown up. I think the big hesitation that those of us who watched this sort of thing and did this sort of work, prosecutor work for a living, also couldn't get our brains wrapped around is that what a prosecutor would normally do if he thought that there was a conspiracy between Trump and Cohen to lie to Congress is you would have Cohen plead guilty to conspiracy to obstruct a congressional investigation and then have him in court when the judge asks, what did you do that makes you guilty? Say, I was involved in this conspiracy with the president. He told me to lie to Congress and I went on ahead and did it.
Exactly.
You didn't see anything like that in the charges against Cohen.
So where could this story have come from? Do you think? I mean, by my reading of it, and it was parts of it were unclear by design, but it left the impression that this was an allegation directly from the office of the special counsel.
Yeah.
What do you make? Yeah, I mean, where do you think this information came from?
Yeah, the word that stuck out to me, Tucker, when I read this was the word "an." Oddly enough, they say at the beginning of the story that the two sources are connected to an investigation of Cohen, which made it elusive whether they were talking about the investigation of Cohen, meaning the special counsel's investigation. So you don't know coming away from this, are these a couple of guys who, you know, are in the loop enough to get briefed on law enforcement investigations but are not in the core of Mueller's team? It's very hard to make a judgment about that. But I can only tell you from, you know, I was fortunate enough as a prosecutor to work on a couple of cases that were pretty high profile cases. And if you asked the number of people who now would say to you that they worked on those cases and were the case agent on the case, there's probably more people who would say it than were, you know, than saw Bobby Thompson's home run. You know, so there's an awful lot of people
who say they have
lots of information. Yeah.
Right. It's like there were 15 million people who claimed to have been at Woodstock. Why would the special counsel's office weigh in on this tonight in the way that it did?
I'm really pleased that they did. I think that probably this is the sort of thing that could really compromise the president's ability to govern. I think a lot of us who have been troubled by this investigation from the beginning think that there's been too much deference to investigative secrecy and not enough acknowledgement that when you have a special counsel investigation, it really makes it very difficult for the president to govern the country, which is a much more important thing than investigative secrecy. I think here, perhaps Mueller saw that this was really harming the president and it was just flat wrong, so he felt compelled to say something.
What do you think of the reaction by members of Congress today to this story?
Well, you know, it's so political now. Each side, but the Democrats in particular, who've just been, you know, deranged about Trump from the start. Anything that seems like it's blood in the water, they just go berserk over. So I can't be surprised by anything anymore.
Amazing. It's an amazing moment. Still trying to shift gears here. Andy McCarthy, thank you very much for your insight into that.
Thanks, Tucker.
Coming up next is Sean Hannity with his view on this BuzzFeed scandal. Here we go now.
It is a fraud. It is a lie. It is all fake news. So the professional Trump haters and the fake news media, they have yet done it again. And earlier today, BuzzFeed News reported a salacious story about Michael Cohen and President Trump, alleging that Cohen briefed Trump about a building project in Moscow numerous times and that the president directed Michael Cohen to lie about the existence of that project when it already had been well known. Now, the story allegedly sourced two anonymous federal law enforcement officials. As it turns out, this report was total fake news. Everyone at BuzzFeed tonight should be ashamed of themselves. But moments ago, the Office of Special Counsel, they actually issued a statement. They wrote, quote, BuzzFeed's description of the specific statements to the Special Counsel's office and characterization of documents and testimony obtained by this office regarding Michael Cohen's congressional testimony are not accurate. Not accurate. But are we really surprised? Oh, and it even gets better. The editor-in-chief of BuzzFeed is actually standing by the reporting, which the FBI, the special counsel, completely refutes. Watch this.
The special counsel issued this very vague statement. We are eager to know what he's talking about.
Do you stand by the reporting that you guys published, which is a scoop that no one else has or has confirmed?
Yes, as we wrote, we have two federal law enforcement officials, no game plan with those titles, who have told us that President Trump directed Michael Cohen to lie to Congress about negotiations to build a Trump Tower in Moscow.
All right, a bold stance from one of the leaders in fake news, and it gets even worse. Now, remember, this is the same BuzzFeed News, supposedly, that published the phony Hillary Clinton bought and paid for steal Russian dossier, and they never, ever tried to corroborate any of the details. And guess what? The latest devastating report contained no direct corroboration. I've been watching this all day, and one of the BuzzFeed reporters who actually broke the story even admitted he never actually saw the evidence that were referenced by his anonymous sources. Now watch this.
You have two law enforcement sources who tell you that they have seen evidence. Have you seen any of that other corroborating evidence?
No, I've not seen it personally, but the folks that we've talked to, the two officials that we've spoken to, are fully 100% read in.
All right, so there's two reporters for BuzzFeed. The other reporter responsible for this story is a guy by the name of Jason Leopold. He actually contradicts his co-author. Watch this.
Now, your colleague who you wrote the story with says that neither of you, when you talk about those documents, that you guys haven't actually seen them. You haven't seen the documents, the texts, the emails, et cetera. So how confident are you that they actually exist, that this is true?
I don't think that we've said we haven't seen them. And we have been, I'll just say that we've seen documents, we've been briefed on documents, we're very confident.
You think that the two authors could get their story straight before appearing on national TV? Now, this was known earlier in the day. Now, getting stories right is not a strength of Jason Leopold. Now, in 2006, this so-called reporter, well, the Columbia Journalism Review all but pretty much called him a liar. The review wrote that he would get stories completely wrong. We knew that today. And, quote, even make up stuff with stories that had no sources at all. Well, it looks like he's done it again, all in a blatant effort to destroy President Trump. It's sad. But what's even really worse, even fake news CNN and conspiracy TV, MSNBC, well, they go with the story, but they're constantly, they put in this caveat over and over again. And this is what we heard all day long. Unverified. But if it's true, with a level of hysteria and excitement. And then, of course, how many times did they mention impeachment? Look at exactly what I mean.
the story, which has not been confirmed by NBC News.
We should note CNN has not independently confirmed BuzzFeed's reporting, nor for that matter has anyone else. An explosive new report that, if true,
if you believe the reporting,
if this is confirmed,
if all of this is true,
if true,
we don't have sourcing that confirms this story, but we're not getting steered off of it.
We don't know for sure. You said you couldn't corroborate this. If true,
this is a potentially very big development.
If it's true. If true. Oh. Now, despite all these red flags, many others in the mainstream media breathlessly, hysterically pushing this fake, phony, fraudulent story, and of course, predicting Trump's imminent impeachment, as they always do, for 2 years. Take a look.
Still no reaction this morning from President Trump to a report that ties him directly to the very same offense for which the House of Representatives moved to impeach Richard Nixon.
That appears that, if true, he'd be guilty of suborning perjury, potentially obstruction of justice. It seems like an impeachable offense. It's exactly the kind of thing that drove Richard Nixon from office.
This report is a huge deal. These are very credible reporters. We're deep in the realm now of credibly impeachable offenses.
There are an awful lot of similarities between a couple of the articles of impeachment against Nixon and the elements of this story.
The impeachment would actually allow him to at least do what he loves, which is to be a snowflake and pretend he's the victim and the Democrats are this and that. But at the end of the day, I think the impeachment process, if these facts are corroborated in today's report, I actually just don't see how Congress can do anything else.
All right, you would think by now the so-called journalists in the echo chamber, the extension of the Democratic Party, would have learned their lesson. They have been burned so many times before in the last 2 years. Remember the short-lived hysteria about NPR's fake Don Jr. story? Remember the hype surrounding Michael Cohen's so-called secret Prague trip? It never happened. Or the Guardian's false reporting about Paul Manafort? Or when three CNN fake news staffers, they were forced to resign after reporting fake news about our friend Anthony Scaramucci? Look at the list we have compiled. Fake story after fake story. Now, the Washington Examiner put this together. 47 printed pages for 1 year alone against Donald Trump of fake news that they breathlessly report. Unbridled. Remember what I said at the beginning of the year? Hatred of the president. So many forced corrections, but then they just keep doing it again and again. How many anonymous sources, hearsay, rumors? Do you think any of this is good for the country? Are they looking out for your security, the economy, a better job for your children, a better future for our grandkids? You know what? Right now, one more notch in the old fake news belt. It is beyond disgusting. But you just saw it all day. People screaming, impeach, impeach, impeach. This is all the hate that we get, as I've been saying, every second, every minute, every hour of every day, from the Democrats, the hate Trump press, and of course the deep state. Now all of a sudden today, the hate Trump media was concerned about obstruction of justice. That's what they wanted you to believe today. But they're the same people who gave Hillary Clinton a pass. It's been almost two straight years of never ending conspiracy theories, fake news hatred, not just for the president though, but also for the people that voted for this president. I've said it since 2007 and 8. Journalism in America is dead and it is buried. And driven by an unprecedented pathological hatred for the president, the bias in this country has become more important than what is fact, what is reporting, rumors more important than sources, as reckless speculation rules the day.
Okay, next is a World Economic Forum, 10-minute clip on the new fourth industrial revolution. Here we go now.
We are wondering what is happening to the world. Everything is changing.
The very idea of human being some sort of natural concept is really going to change.
our bodies will be so high-tech we won't be able to really distinguish between what's natural and what's artificial.
Inside our own heads is the most complex arrangement of matter in the known universe.
You might ask yourself, can we get to be superhumans?
The original Industrial Revolution was driven by the discovery that you could use steam engines to do all kinds of interesting things.
But that was followed by additional revolutions for electricity and computers and communications technology. We're now in the early stages of the fourth Industrial Revolution, which is bringing together digital, physical, and biological systems.
One of the features of this fourth Industrial Revolution is that it doesn't change what we are doing, but it changes us.
With the ability to visualize brain activity, for example, through a simple consumer-based EEG device, it gives us access to ourselves in ways that we've never before thought possible. It unlocks the black box that is the brain and enables us to really, truly be able to realize an identity that is aspirational.
There's now a scientific foundation for the effects of mindfulness on the brain, on the genome, on biological aging. And when the human mind does know itself, then you get the potential for a new renaissance that restructures itself in terms of our relationship to life, our relationship to the planet, our relationship to work.
We need a different economic model. And by that, I don't mean capitalism versus communism. What I'm talking about is a shift in the system along the lines of the two big changes that happened in the 20th century, Keynesianism, with a much greater focus on health and education and the role of government working with business, and then a reaction against that in late century to neoliberalism, where the focus was on free markets, freedom of the individual, and getting governments out of the way. We need a shift to a new system that will allow us to meet the basic needs of every human on the planet, that will live within planetary means, that will be fairer, and that will be focused as its key goal, not on growth per se, but on maximizing human well-being. And history tells us that a value shift is triggered by creation of a new story about how we want to live.
I see the circular economy as something which fits very closely with mankind's goal to be innovative and creative and to always progress. We can use asset tracking, we can use IT, we can use 3D printing to enable this different economic model to recover materials, feed them back into the economy, and really to decouple growth from the resource constraints we have.
The reason we live in cities is not different today than it was 10,000 years ago. Even if we have got networks connecting us, we still want to have places where we meet in person. Well, this means the place where we work and the place where we live are much closer to each other, a city where we don't need to have big supply chains in order to produce things, where many things can be sourced locally thanks to 3D printing and robotics. So if we're able to do something to transform cities, to make them more efficient, then the impact can be huge.
Think about the prospect of getting rid of plastics. We must not only be inspired or informed by nature, but actually use natural organisms with which to design products and building parts. Only instead of varying material properties, we're varying biological functionality.
Design is critical today because it's the first signal of human intention. So the question of adding quality to quantity, it isn't a matter of simply circulating things that are potentially toxic. It's circulating things that are safe and healthy for all generations. So the goal is no longer, I want to be less bad, less monotonous, less unsafe, less unjust. It's really about a diverse, safe, healthy, and just world with clean air, clean water, clean soil, clean energy.
Together we are fighting to preserve our fragile climate from irreversible damage and devastation of unthinkable proportions.
If we think about the original Industrial Revolution, it was an energy revolution. I like to think of it as a kind of bookending of a period in human history during which we used fossil fuels and it worked very well for us for a long time, but now we have to bring that to an end. We have energy technologies that can power our civilization, solar, wind, biomass. So then the question is, well, how do we get grid integration? Maybe the wind is blowing in Denmark, the sun is shining in Germany, and now you can move that electricity through an integrated grid. You can supply energy to everyone who needs it, and you can supply energy at all times.
See different stuff as far as like the body marriage line. They use a lot of things that help them lift up and move things to the car. You just sit there and, you know, program something, and if it has its own set mind to go ahead and do everything. And then as humans, we just come in and take the extra step to help the technology.
It's not the cure-all for everything. There's definitely a lot of things where people perform the operation better, but certainly for the right applications, robotics are a huge improvement for the process.
The prediction of 5 million jobs lost by 2020 to technology is serious, but it's not the main question. Construction, manufacturing, services, public health and education, these industries will still exist. The main question is, what will be the future of work? How will we define work? How will we share the wealth?
From the viewpoint of the labor or jobs, now we really need a new education or new training.
We're working with a World in Motion in FIRST Robotics, trying to encourage, you know, students from third grade all the way up through the end of high school. We had students make sailboats, and then we had them race them, and so they could see how quickly they could move. And they immediately went back and started to say, oh, I saw what happened. I'm going to go change this or that. And that was third graders.
I just given a prize to a kid of 18 years old that has discovered something really very, very unique. Came up with how to get better productivity and better yields for seeds of corn. And so he basically came with the idea that if you would perforate these seeds, you would get more food. And you think about it and say, but he didn't go to university. So how does he get all that knowledge? And he told me, I mean, I've been watching YouTube since the age of 12, and I'm so interested that I've seen everything about it. I've read everything about it. The world is really open to learning. The thing is, how do you give the incentive to your kids to do that?
It's this ability of digital technology to change outcomes, to truly empower people all over the world that can create a more equitable growth, because I think the world needs that.
Fourth Industrial Revolution has the potential to make inequalities visible and to make them less acceptable in the future, and hopefully to gather and garner political support to take the necessary decision to reduce the gap.
Humans have always been using tools, but because of the recent advances in technology, we're beginning to have machines that can augment us in all sorts of interesting ways.
I was the first person in the world to be able to voluntarily move my legs while stepping in a robot by exciting the nervous system using electrical stimulators directly onto the spine. We believe that a cure will be possible if enough of the right people have the will to fast track a cure for paralysis.
We take two things from the patients. First, we take a three-dimensional x-ray, and we extract the three-dimensional data out of that so we can make a perfectly shaped puzzle piece. And then we also take a sample of fat tissue from the patient so that we can extract the stem cells out of those. And we use those stem cells with this three-dimensional scaffold that we fabricate, and after 3 weeks, we have a piece of living bone that's ready for implantation.
Being able to use genome editing to understand the genetic changes that lead to cancer, and technologies like drug delivery, getting molecules into particular types of cells, there's a lot of excitement about being able to move much more quickly on this disease.
One of the things that I think is so essential to free and open societies is freedom of thought. And up until now, the conversation we've been having is around freedom of speech. Once we can access people's thoughts and access people's emotions, we have to create a space that enables people to think freely, to think divergent thoughts, to think creative thoughts. And in a society where people fear having those thoughts, the likelihood of being able to enjoy progress is significantly diminished.
we need to take responsibility at every level of society, from the individual and the personal to the institutional to the global, to adapt to these technological challenges and changes which are redefining what it means to be human, what it means to work, what it means to be completely embedded in this world.
People always ask me if I'm an optimist or a pessimist. The technology exists, but how do we get it and implement it at the scale we need at a price that people around the world can afford?
Even though we have everyday problems we have to solve, we have to find a way to lay the foundations for the innovations of tomorrow.
Basically talking about transhumanism and world communism. Next is we're going to finish with Trump's speech, his offer that he's made today in the from the White House to the Democrats in settling the close down. Here we go now with President Trump.
Just a short time ago, I had the honor of presiding over the swearing in of five new great American citizens. It was a beautiful ceremony and a moving reminder of our nation's proud history of welcoming legal immigrants from all over the world into our national family. I told them that the beauty and majesty of citizenship is that it draws no distinctions of race or class or faith or gender or background. All Americans, whether first generation or 10th generation, are bound together in love and loyalty, friendship and affection. We are all equal. We are one team and one people proudly saluting one great American flag. We believe in a safe and lawful system of immigration, one that upholds our laws, our traditions, and our most cherished values. Unfortunately, our immigration system has been badly broken for a very long time. Over the decades, many presidents and many lawmakers have come and gone, and no real progress has been made on immigration. We are now living with the consequences, and they are tragic, brought about by decades of political stalemate, partisan gridlock, and national neglect. There is a humanitarian and security crisis on our southern border that requires urgent action. Thousands of children are being exploited by ruthless coyotes and vicious cartels and gangs. One in three women is sexually assaulted on the dangerous journey north. In fact, many loving mothers give their young daughters birth control pills for the long journey up to the United States because they know they may be raped or sexually accosted or assaulted. Nearly 50 migrants a day are being referred for urgent medical care. Vast quantities of lethal narcotics are flooding through our border and into our communities, including meth, cocaine, heroin, and fentanyl. Drugs kill 78,000 Americans a year and cost our society in excess of $700 billion. Heroin alone kills 300 Americans a week, 90% of which comes across our southern border. We can stop heroin. Illegal immigration reduces wages and strains public services. The lack of border control provides a gateway, in a very wide and open gateway, for criminals and gang members to enter the United States, including the criminal aliens who murdered a brave California police officer only a day after Christmas. I've gotten to know and love angel moms, dads, and family who lost loved ones to people illegally in our country. I want this to end. It's got to end now. These are not talking points. These are the heartbreaking realities that are hurting innocent, precious human beings every single day on both sides of the border. As a candidate for president, I promised I would fix this crisis, and I intend to keep that promise one way or the other. Our immigration system should be the subject of pride, not a source of shame, as it is all over the world. Our immigration system should be the envy of the world, not a symbol of disunity and dysfunction. The good news is these problems can all be solved, but only if we have the political courage to do what is just and what is right. Both sides in Washington must simply come together, listen to each other, put down their armor, build trust, reach across the aisle, and find solutions. It is time to reclaim our future from the extreme voices who fear compromise and demand open borders, which means drugs pouring in, human trafficking, and a lot of crime. That is why I am here today, to break the logjam and provide Congress with a path forward to end the government shutdown and solve the crisis on the southern border. If we are successful in this effort, we will then have the best chance in a very long time at real bipartisan immigration reform. And it won't stop here. It will keep going until we do it all. The proposal I will outline today is based on, first and foremost, on input from our border agents and Homeland Security professionals, and professionals they are. They know what they're doing. It is a compassionate response to the ongoing tragedy on our southern border. In recent weeks, we have met with large numbers of Democrat lawmakers to hear their ideas and suggestions. By incorporating the priorities of rank-and-file Democrats in our plan, we hope they will offer their enthusiastic support, and I think many will. This is a common-sense compromise both parties should embrace. The radical left can never control our borders. I will never let it happen. Walls are not immoral. In fact, they are the opposite of immoral, because they will save many lives and stop drugs from pouring into our country. Our plan includes the following: $800 million in urgent humanitarian assistance, $805 million for drug detection technology to help secure our ports of entry, an additional 2,750 border agents and law enforcement professionals, 75 new immigration judge teams to reduce the court backlog of, believe it or not, almost 900,000 cases. However, the whole concept of having lengthy trials for anyone who sets one foot in our country unlawfully must be changed by Congress. It is unsustainable. It is ridiculous. Few places in the world would even consider such an impossible nightmare. Our plan includes critical measures to protect migrant children from exploitation and abuse. This includes a new system to allow Central American minors to apply for asylum in their home countries, and reform to promote family reunification for unaccompanied children, thousands of whom wind up on our border doorstep. To physically secure our border, the plan includes $5.7 billion for a strategic deployment of physical barriers, or a wall. This is not a 2,000-mile concrete structure from sea to sea. These are steel barriers in high-priority locations. Much of the border is already protected by natural barriers such as mountains and water. We already have many miles of barrier including 115 miles that we are currently building or under contract, it will be done quickly. Our request will add another 230 miles this year in the areas our border agents most urgently need. It will have an unbelievable impact. If we build a powerful and fully designed see-through steel barrier on our southern border, the crime rate and drug problem in our country would be quickly and greatly reduced. Some say it could be cut in half. Because these criminals, drug smugglers, gangs, and traffickers do not stop at our border. They permeate throughout our country, and they end up in some places where you'd least expect them. They go all over our country. A steel barrier will help us stop illegal immigration while safely directing commerce to our lawful ports of entry. Many of these security ideas have been proposed by Democrats themselves, and all of them have been supported by Democrats in the past, including a physical barrier wall or fence. Furthermore, in order to build the trust and goodwill necessary to begin real immigration reform, there are two more elements to my plan. Number one is 3 years of legislative relief for 700,000 DACA recipients brought here unlawfully by their parents at a young age many years ago. This extension will give them access to work permits, social security numbers, and protection from deportation, most importantly. Secondly, our proposal provides a 3-year extension of temporary protected status, or TPS. This means that 300,000 immigrants whose protected status is facing expiration will now have 3 more years of certainty so that Congress can work on a larger immigration deal, which everybody wants, Republicans and Democrats. And our farmers and vineyards won't be affected because lawful and regulated entry into our country will be easy and consistent. That is our plan. Border security, DACA, TPS, and many other things. Straightforward, fair, reasonable, and common sense with lots of compromise. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has pledged to bring this bill to a vote this week in the United States Senate. Our proposal is not intended to solve all of our immigration challenges. This plan solves the immediate crisis, and it is a horrible crisis. It is a humanitarian crisis like we rarely see in our country. And it provides humanitarian relief, delivers real border security, and immediately reopens our federal government. If we are successful in this effort, then we can start the border project of remaking our immigration system for the 21st century. Once the government is open and we have made a down payment on border security and immigration reform starts to happen, I plan to convene weekly bipartisan meetings at the White House so we can do a finished product, a great product, a product that we can all be proud of having to do with that elusive immigration problem. Whatever we do, I can promise you this. I will never forget that my first duty and ultimate loyalty is to you, the American people. Any reforms we make to our immigration system will be designed to improve your lives, make your community safer, and make our nation more prosperous and secure for generations to come. Thank you, and God bless America. Thank you.
That's our program this week. We want to thank you for listening, and man, it was packed, I know, full. And we had a clip from the World Economic Forum. They're pushing world communism, but it's under the guise of something called truistic stuff. but also they're pushing to control people through a greater and greater manipulation of the digital, you could say, environment. And oh, they're going to teach us also how well environment is. We've got to keep the world clean and healthy. But thank you very much for listening, and good night. Good luck with everything. God bless everyone there. Thank you. Good night. Bye-bye.